KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KSU Santa Clara. 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joe, and with me, of course, is...
Caleb.
And...
Jason.
That's right. So, gentlemen, how have you been?
Been well, been busy, and had bad traffic on the way in, so that was a load of shenanigans right there.
Well, yeah, I would agree. That's never a good thing.
No.
I love bad traffic, so I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I was like, it was horrible. It's like, I thought, oh, I'm here at the... At the 101 exit near the airport. It's only 6:30. I should have been plenty of time, even with this traffic. No, no.
See, you're just looking at it wrong. It's another opportunity for me time.
Okay.
That's right. You should be thinking about me during that time.
Well, I was looking forward to being here, so I guess in a way.
So, yeah. Sort of.
Okay,
he was
mission
thinking,
accomplished then. You know?
Yeah, all right. Well, that's cool. Well, as I mentioned before, this is Robots Attack, and what we like to do is a geek-centric talk show. And the first thing we like to do to start off the show is talk about some new releases.
Woohoo!
I'm going to start us off with some movies coming out to the theater. Probably the biggest one, I use that term very loosely, I, Frankenstein. An unlikely hero comes to the aid of humankind as a race of supernatural creatures look to take over the Earth. Next,
again?
Yeah, you know, it always seems to happen. Next, we have Gimme Shelter in limited release. Forced to flee her abusive mother, played by Rosario Dawson, and turned away by her Wall Street father, played by Brendan Fraser. Agnes Apple Bailey, played by Vanessa Hudgens, who you could not recognize her whatsoever. I was like, whoa, that's Vanessa Hudgens, huh? When I saw the trailer for this. Finds herself...
Same with Dawson. Like, Rosario Dawson looks nothing like herself in it. So.
Yeah. Finds herself on a desperate and isolated journey of survival in the depths of despair. She meets a compassionate stranger, played by James Earl Jones, who ultimately leads her to salvation and unprecedented support in a suburban shelter for homeless teenagers. Apparently based on a true story, I think. Like that.
Oh, James Earl Jones is that awesome. So.
It's true. He has magical powers. Mm-hmm. And finally, another movie in limited release, Knights of Badassdom. Live-action role players conjure up a demon from hell by mistake, and they must deal with the consequences.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice.
You see, kids, that D&D is evil. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Continue.
That's it.
Oh, that was it. Okay, so... that's it. If none of those are, if that sounds interesting, but you're looking to keep it inside this weekend, maybe you'll want to hit your local Redbox and or whatever your DVD collection or your Blu-ray collection might need a little freshening up. You might consider Best Man Down. Also out on Blu-ray and DVD this week, when the best man dies at their wedding, the bride and groom return back home to arrange for his funeral. As they do, they find out much more about the guy than they ever knew. Then there's Blackwater Vampire on DVD. A group of filmmakers look to uncover the truth about the Blackwater murders and hopefully clear a man who's been held for the crimes. When they investigate the scene of the horror, they find themselves in danger of losing their own lives.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's see. Captain Phillips on Blu-ray and DVD. Based on actual events, this movie is about the hostile takeover of the MV Maersk, Alabama. Also on Blu-ray and DVD, Machete Kills. Machete returns, and this time he's called in by the U.S. president to stop a madman who wants to turn the world into a war zone! Or something like that. And then The Prey.
You're close.
On Blu-ray and DVD. While serving a light sentence, a small-time criminal shares a cell with a man who turns out to be a serial killer, who gets out before he does. Can he stop the killer before destroying his life?
Whoa.
Dun, dun, dun!
A lot of dun 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 movies.
There's some suspense, yeah. Suspenseful flicks in the year, in the Blu-ray and DVD this week.
Tis the season.
Seems like. So that rounds out the list we have. PSA.
Yes. Enjoy live entertainment at the 26th annual Russian Festival, a celebration of Russian American food, dance, music, and art. Explore a museum of Russian culture as well as a local art gallery and bazaar of Russian gifts and crafts. The festival will be held on Friday, February 21st through Sunday, February 23rd at the Russian Center of San Francisco on 2460 Sutter Street in San Francisco. For more information on tickets and festival hours, visit www.russiancentersf.com.
All right, moving on to things that aren't Russian related. The world of video games. All right, I've got first off Ollie Ollie for the Vita. Ollie Ollie mixes one life gameplay with over 120 tricks and grinds across 50 levels, 250 challenges, spots mode, and daily grind. Complete all challenges to unlock the super skillful rad mode. Rack up the biggest and coolest combos along the way, then time your landing to perfection to rule the leaderboards. Just don't slam on your face. You will slam on your face. Ollie Ollie rewards the most skillful and riskiest players, always tempting them to go for that audacious 360 backside flip and ludicrous chain of combos, leaving them to their time landing to perfection or risk losing your score. If you understand any of that, it might be cool for you. All right, number two. Dead Rising 3 DLC, Operation Broken Eagle for the Xbox One. Operation Broken Eagle puts you in control of Spec Ops Commander Adam Kane on a mission that challenges everything he believes to capture the missing president of the United States while battling the zombie apocalypse. This side story features a new mission, new weapons, new vehicle, and more. And finally, for the PS4, Basement Crawl, a strategic action game featuring creepy characters, challenging environments, and maze-based competitive multiplayer. Players will face off with up to 8 players online or up to 4 via local play in grid-based arenas as they race to set traps and explosives in order to hinder or defeat their enemies. Basement Crawl features 4 classes, each utilizing a variety of unique bombs and power-ups, allowing players to mix and match strategy for each class.
Neat.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And if you're looking to fill out some reading material that has some also visual impact, check out your comics. These are a few that you might want to add to your pull list or run out and grab them now. Batman 27. Batman and Gordon try to return lights and sanity back to Gotham. This issue leads into the final arc of Zero Year. And then Harley Quinn number 2. Harley and Ivy want to save a pile of puppies and kittens. No problems here. Nope. Shifty eyes.
A pile of living puppies and kittens?
Near as I can tell. I don't have the
issue. Because normally yet. You don't call them a pile, you know?
Have you ever seen a pile of puppies and kittens? It's pretty adorable. Even when they're still alive, yes.
Even then?
Especially then.
There you go.
Let's see. From the other side of town, the Marvel Studios, there's all new X-Men number 22. Jean Grey is back on Earth. And that means the Phoenix Force is too. And there are some aliens that don't like this and aim to remove them both.
Whoa.
It will take the strength of the X-Men and the Guardians of the Galaxy to protect her and the Earth.
Makes sense. Makes sense. It's a big job.
It is a big job. And Origin 2, as in... Anyways. Origin 2, number 2. Logan is cut off from his family and struggles to move on. At the same time, reports of a wild, clawed man have returned to society. And now Creed is hunted. And then from publishers that don't that aren't exclusively to New York, ElfQuest, the final quest, number 1 from Dark Horse. Times are changing. While the Wolf Riders try to keep the old ways, the humans and the Wolf Riders' proximity to the High One's palace means that nothing will ever be the same again. My Little Pony, Friends Forever, number 1. from IDW. Yes, this new series focuses on only two ponies at a time. Whoa, this time it's Applejack and Pinkie Pie, and they are as they challenge each other to a bake-off.
Whoa. Horses baking?
Can they do that?
In the magical world of My Little Pony, they can.
I've never paid attention. Do they just use like their mouths, or do their hooves have thumbs?
The hooves don't have thumbs, but they have specially designed extra devices. I don't know. I don't really watch the show. I just know
a wizard did it.
Okay.
Yep. When in doubt, blame magic.
Makes sense.
Let's see. And to sort of follow on with the DLC for Dead Rising is The Walking Dead number 120. It's part 6 of the All Out War storyline, and it's The Walking Dead. If that means anything to you at all, you probably want to pick it up. Exo Man of War number 21 from Valiant. What could the world's governments want with a time traveling, planet saving wielder of the most powerful weapon ever known? Ah, nothing a little prison and torture can't cure. Mm. Ooh, wait a minute. And then, if you don't feel like laying out cash for a comic, you might consider Invisible Bread at invisiblebread.com. It's simple and amusing.
Nice. All right.
I actually have one for this.
Oh.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Because this seemed like a big deal to me. I don't know if the release is going to correlate over here, but I guess it came out in its original territory. Judge Dredd came out with a new series called Mega City 2.
Ah.
And apparently, which is something I'd never heard in any of the Dredd stuff, apparently the West Coast also survived. And so it's a whole different society, basically. They're connected loosely, but they have kind of different rules and so on. So
that could be interesting.
It basically sounds like all of the things that are kind of horrible about California to begin with have blossomed into a society with a lot of interesting tricks to it. So basically, Judge Dredd, this very tough, like, dispense justice with bullets type of person, has to figure out how to not kill people in this neck of the woods.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it sounds kind of interesting. And it's heavily influenced, apparently, by Futurama. So, sound kind of interesting.
Was not expecting that.
Yeah, that was not a connection I was expecting to make.
Yeah, the idea is that a lot of the cities built upwards instead of outwards.
Right.
So, oh, okay. I thought you were going to say they took place in the same world or something.
No. Yeah. Apparently there are a lot of in-jokes that, like, little things since they have similar city, like, builds. But, yeah.
Alrighty, well, to wrap up our new releases, I'll mention some music. We've got Age by the band The Hidden Cameras, the 6th studio release for the Canadian indie pop collective led by Joel Gibb, is its first in 5 years. And then we have Warpaint by Warpaint, second full-length release for the Los Angeles indie rock band, was produced with Flood. Then we have Rave Tapes from Magwai, the 8th full-length release for the Scottish post-rock band, was produced with Paul Savage. And we have Strong Feelings from Doug Paisley, the 3rd full-length release for the Canadian singer-songwriter. It was recorded in Toronto with a band that included Gary Craig, Basil Donovan, Robbie Grunwald, Garth Hudson, Emmett Kelly, and Mary Margaret O'Hara. And finally, we have Tranquilizers from Dogbite, with the addition of Woody Shortridge and Takamura, the 2nd release, finds the band led by Phil Jones expanded to a quartet. Alrighty, that's going to do it for the new releases. As I mentioned at the start of the hour, sort of, we are Robots Attack, a one and only geek-centric talk show here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. And we like to talk about geek stuff. We do the news. We do geek talk. We have a special section, Caleb's Corner, where Caleb brings out an issue and talks about that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have our main big topic segment of the evening called The Core. And Jason has offered our suggestion for that tonight. And, I think it's going to be a good one.
Definitely.
It's going to be
a good
show.
We'll have fun with it, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure you're going to have fun listening to it, too. And, of course, we love it when you participate.
That's right. And if you want to participate with us, You can find us on Facebook or do a search on your when you go into the page for Robots Attack. Two words that will bring us up. And if you want to find us on Twitter, we are Robots Attack Me, all one word. And then finally, there's ye olde email, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And finally, if you're just trying to like, wait, too much, just remember robotsattack.me. That is our own website. We have links to everything described here under the button that says interact. And also on the right-hand sidebar in the box that says interact that has all of that there as well. Please interact with us. We keep Twitter and Facebook open during the show. We will definitely respond if you respond to us. It's fun.
Yes. So have fun with us. All right, we're going to take a music break. Before we get to the news, I'm going to play the local artist, Sugar Candy Mountain, the track Echo Praxia from the album Mystic Hits. All right, we are Robots Attack.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Radio stream. Want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio? Stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website and never be without the underground sound.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. We are in the news, and Caleb has our first story.
Yes. It's part of my fascination with space. The team that is keeping track of the Mars rovers has something really, really cool that they found recently. They were looking at the tapes of the cameras they feed back. You know, it takes a few minutes to get signals there and back again.
Right.
About 14 minutes because speed of light and all that good stuff. But when they were
that's bad internet.
I know. They need to get like better internet up there.
Yeah. Something like that. When they were comparing the before and afters of like the same shot of ground, and they noticed there was a new rock in one of the photos.
Wait, a new rock?
Yes. What happened? What they suspect happened? They aren't positive yet, but they're pretty sure that what happened was as they were moving the rover around, it knocked a rock from its center position where you kind of got the semi reddish side of with facing up to flip over so they could see the underside of it. And it's actually a brilliant white, and it's made up of materials that are it has a very unusual makeup of materials. Like the minerals inside it are, you know, they're
hopes
alien
and dreams,
for
right?
Like, huh?
Hopes and dreams, right?
Sort of.
Okay.
I'm
happy.
The concentrations of materials are totally different than what you find here on Earth. And which makes sense because it's on Mars, but at the same time, it's just one of those things. Like
it's
when
like
you,
a different planet, kind of.
Yeah, it's yeah, like, but when you really see, when you really see these things, you're just like, it is like, while it's similar, totally different, and okay. it's just fascinating. Like because like you know, the NASA scientists are like kind of like, oh my gosh, this. No, we're not expecting this. Like you know, to flip over a rock and be able to actually like see more of it as opposed to like you know drilling in.
Oh, okay. It's
like. Normally, they're scraping bits off the surface, which is what we're used to seeing, which has a high concentration of iron oxide, which is why it's
so. It sounds
red.
Like one of those stories that everybody freaked out for a split second because they were thinking aliens were like messing with the rover, and then they figured out a good explanation, and they were all bored, and then they realized it was like a big deal again. Does that sound about right?
That's probably one version of it. Okay. It seemed from the bit of the presentation that I saw linked in the video on this article, it sounded like everyone was pretty excited from the get go, which is and then they just remained excited as it went on. So, hey, we're looking forward to seeing what further study will bring about from this, like. If it will give us more insight into the actual foundational makeup of how Mars was created in the first place, you know, because it's since it is still a rocky planet, not like Saturn, but like Earth.
Mm.
But still, it's like it's.
I'm sticking with hopes and dreams.
I'm sure that's part of it.
Yeah,
that's those are the
but whose
indeed. That's a good question.
Those are the ethereal elements. That's harder to nail down.
It's true. In my world, that's mm-hmm.
whose hopes and dreams do you think they are, listeners? Let us know on our Facebook or Twitter page.
I'm hoping they're mine. That way, I haven't discovered my own hopes and dreams yet. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you're gonna have to get on that trip. 10 years to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-way trip, but hey, you'll find your hopes and dreams there, maybe, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Hey, I found them. Great. I'm stuck here.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my hopes and dreams were to be on Mars in the first place.
Wait a minute. This seems sort of weird.
Yeah. In an unrelated story to do with corpses.
okay.
They found a new spider in Peru, which I'm on its surface probably isn't that big of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Peru's an interesting place.
It
and
is.
Spiders mm-hmm. are small,
mm-hmm.
and true. So you're Peru's probably going to find new ones
eventually
there because there's a lot of spiders.
A lot of spiders.
Mm-hmm. Much to some mm-hmm. people's chagrin,
mm-hmm.
but this one, it's a contender for coolest ever because. Okay. Yeah, it uses the corpses of its kills to create a larger spider. Not like a mech suit or anything
like climb but, in and like, you know,
right.
Power
I mean,
off.
that would be super cool. And that's probably the next spider. That's like Jerry. This spider's best friend, he's mm-hmm. working on that right now.
Yeah, okay.
And they're going to discover him in a little while.
Yeah.
Once he masters it.
But, he's been watching Robotech over the shoulders of the children in the house going, I can do that! I can do that!
Right. But for now, Ted is still pretty interesting. That's mm-hmm. Jerry's friend, mm-hmm. this spider.
But
right
what
here.
About Daryl?
Daryl, we're still working on Daryl.
I don't remember what each letter stood for.
Anyway, so... Basically, what it does is it strings up all of its normal web-type things, as spiders do, but it does it in the vague shape of a spider's legs. And so then it starts pinning the corpses of of its meals to these different legs, and it creates a larger spider. And it just sits comfortably in the middle, and that way it's more terrifying for... things that would look to eat it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. Which to me, I'm kind of surprised there's not just like a bigger bird or something like that. They would be like, that looks like a scrumptious giant spider, but it must be in the perfect place where giant birds aren't or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The story is going to be available for you to look at in case I miss something about how it's managed to survive large birds. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Side note, Daryl stands for Data Analyzing Robot Youth Life Form.
There you go.
There you go. So
I forgot about the youth part of it.
Yeah.
I remembered the other parts vaguely.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense because he was... like a little guy, right?
Yeah, he's a kid.
He's a kid.
Okay.
Kid robot. Yeah. Well, moving on to a story about the opposite end from a kid, an old man.
Okay.
This story I snagged from IGN. This might be hard to hear, true believers, but Marvel Comics legend Stan Lee will not appear in the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
What?
That's weird.
From the Good Samaritan hot dog vendor in the first Spider-Man to the Hugh Hefner look-alike in Iron Man, these goofy cameos have been something of a fixture in Marvel-based movies, respectively of which studio happens to be behind a particular franchise. Alas, Guardians of the Galaxy will be utterly devoid of the Generalissimo, who delivered the devastating news on an episode of the Dweebcast. When asked if he was in the movie, the 91-year-old, man, 91, responded,
"Whoa,
yeah.
No, I'm afraid not. That's the one group I didn't create. I didn't write Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm not even sure who they all are. I can't wait to see the movie." There's a video with a little link to it on there. Though it may seem like Lee has been in every movie based on Marvel titles, he generally will only appear in a film if he had a hand in creating its characters, which That's explains fair. Why he wasn't in any of the Punisher or Ghost Rider movies.
Mm.
Though it does,
among other things.
Yeah. Though it does make one wonder what he was doing in Captain America, the First Avenger. Logistics have reportedly played a role as well, as in the cases of X-Men First Class and The Wolverine, neither of which features Lee. What's interesting is that according to Nerd, a B word, let's just say, Lee did in fact write the 1960 issue of Tales to Astonish in which Guardians member Groot, who will be voiced by Vin Diesel, first appeared. As IO9 points out, however, if Lee doesn't know who's on the team, how could he know if it includes any of his creations?
Exactly.
Hmm. So.
True. True, true. We have a response to you, Jason. It says, the listener says,
Get out.
They like spiders. Get out. You know. But your spider sounds terrifying. Yeah, and I got to say, a spider that steals the corpses of its kills of other spiders is pretty intense.
Well, it's not a thieving spider, best I can tell. It's just its own kills. So it's very honest in that way.
At least it's honest, right? Yeah. All right.
It just uses them to become like
a better mecha spider.
Yeah.
Non-mobile mecha spider.
Superior spider.
Right. Yeah.
Without the man, because it's just not a man.
Yeah. That's no man.
That's a merely superior spider, or a merely superior spider, and I don't know.
It's yes. We'll go.
I'll work on my inflection on them.
Yeah. So, from that we return to space.
Okay.
Because Guardians of the Galaxy is in space.
See, there you go. See,
and
it's perfect segue.
We're just transitioning back into more realism space, and specifically, the show Cosmos. The old Carl Sagan show, which it focused on scientific discovery and astronomy and astrophysics.
I used to call it Sleepy Time.
This is space.
Billions
it's big.
And billions.
Billions
of stars.
And billions of stars.
It was very dry, but it was also really, really good.
In space.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. There are planets and stars. Did I mention billions and billions of stars in space, which is big?
So if you felt that his that Mr. Sagan's delivery was a little bit dry.
Never saw it.
Oh, it's actually really good. You can find it on Netflix.
Yeah,
I like it.
I think I have it in my queue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think I threw it in there like, oh, a space thing. That should be cool to watch at some point.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's
Sleepy Time.
The visuals are dated, but it's still really good information.
Okay.
Anyway, it's going to get a reboot onto television with Fox, I believe.
Huh.
And it'll be featuring Neil deGrasse Tyson as the host.
Mr. Badass himself.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure you know the guy if you see a picture of him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'll recognize him when you see him. The thing that threw me for a curve, though, was that it will be produced by...
Menon.
No, Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, okay.
Of Family Guy fame. And at first I was like, huh, what is that going to be like? But apparently they have Neil deGrasse Tyson as the front man, and Seth's main goal is to produce high quality animations that really illustrate the points that he's making and trying to elevate the idea of the things that he's talking about. And they also have Carl Sagan's widow and one of the lead producers from the original PBS documentary on board as well, and I think another person from Fox who was I think did one of their sci-fi shows. I can't remember exactly which one that was, but the main thing is that it sounds like they are actually being very their goal is to be very reverent to the original idea of Cosmos and keep it solid and not, you know, it's not going to be Family Guy up. Nothing against Family Guy. It's not my cup of tea. So okay. I was really nervous when I heard that Seth MacFarlane was going to be a part of it. But from when they screened it at, I think, Comic-Con, it was met with, like, basically a standing ovation. So, like, that's not faint praise. So
yeah, it sounds like he's an interesting guy. He has many varied interests, but yes, based on what I can tell.
And honestly, I guess when I heard about this, I'm like, this gives me a little bit more appreciation for who and what he is. And I don't necessarily like his comedy, but I appreciate the fact that he has interests beyond just Family Guy. It's nice to know that that's not his only gig, so to speak. So
yeah
they had charging stations at Comic-Con, mm-hmm. like outside of the convention center, where you could go and plug your cell phone into or you know, tablet or something to charge up, and they had like screens with the with that promoting over it, because it was like Cosmos power stations.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, okay. it showed little like interviews with them. So
very cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So there you go. Cosmos is coming back.
There you go.
How cool is that?
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm interested to find out what the intro is going to sound like. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be curious to see what it's like too. I'm looking forward to that.
This should get like James Earl Jones, William Shatner,
at least. Well, Patrick they Stewart. Could do a duet or something like that. Or
they should get everyone who did the space, the Final Frontier. You know, everyone who did that. They should get all of them, and each cut a version of the intro. So like, when the DVD comes out, a Blu-ray or something, you know, you can get.
Special edition.
All the alternate voices.
Kind of like the different covers for a comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everyone from Kate Mulgrew to...
That's pretty smart. You'll sell multiple copies of the same DVD that way, so...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay,
Or just do it as a special features
audio. That's what I was thinking, but yeah.
Okay. Or even audio tracks.
Yeah, if you want to get everyone to buy like 6 copies. There you go.
Anyway, and now for something completely different. The
ocean.
The Pentagon is looking or is investing in giving the military a lot more large balls.
Okay.
Yeah. Inflatable balls that work as satellites. But, but still... It's kind of a neat story because basically different Spec Ops teams have had access to this kind of nifty technology where you inflate a radar dish
mm-hmm.
like it's a big bouncy ball, and you can do all of your stuff that way just by tethering it to the ground. Well, they realized that it's actually a really good idea just for the entire military. And mm-hmm. so they ended up coming up with larger balls,
mm-hmm.
and they're in the middle of creating them right now. They look, it's interesting, because the pictures that they have of these, the preliminary, the first few that have been deployed are kind of odd, because it's just weird seeing a military camp and seeing a big bouncy ball tethered in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it does look vaguely military. It's kind of a camo-ish color. And
that wonderful military green?
Right. And it has, like, techno bits sticking out of it.
Mm. But... Appetizing. That sounds really cool, though, because when you can find ways to reduce the amount of, like, rigid hardware that you have to drag around with you, that makes... things a lot lighter and a lot easier to set up on the fly too.
Right. And basically they're working on a larger one, but the one that they're in the middle of deploying more of right now, it actually packs down into a backpack that's less than 100 pounds. And so they can have an entire communications array that can set up a mobile base with complete communications just on the back of some guy that they can inflate up and be ready to go.
That's kind of
really
cool.
Quickly. So it put in that perspective, it's a pretty nifty bit of tech.
Yeah.
And just ingenious. And anytime you can just inflate something to make it cooler, and make it more functional, I'm all for it. So
yeah. Nice. Sounds fascinating.
Yeah. Definitely sounds like some useful balls. Mm-hmm. Speaking of things that are useful, San Jose Animal Advocates. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. That's where I found them. All right, moving on to art. For you people who love art, you know who you are out there. Yeah, overrated, right?
Right.
Right, Jason? Psh, art. Ah. The London Museum could connect people to art through games.
Ooh.
This story from Polygon. The head of creative content at London's Tate Gallery is embracing technology, including video games, to introduce the public to the museum's art. Quote, "We wanted ways to use technology to increase our audience reach and new ways to connect people with art," Jane Burton told Reuters. As such, one of four finalists for the Tate IK Prize, Tatecraft, proposes recreating the gallery in Minecraft and allow players to explore and interact with the virtual museum and its exhibits.
That's not bad.
You can see Adam Clark's proposal, which he said is, quote, "all about bringing fine art to the computer game playing public," in the video above. There is a video included with this story, which will be posted on our Facebook page, as well as a link on our Twitter. Chosen by a jury of six that includes Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales, the other Tate IK Prize project finalists include robots. That would roam the gallery at night, interactive videos and stories told through social media. You can see each pitch at the IK Prize official site. The winner will be announced February 6th and receive a budget of, it's in pounds, but they did give a conversion.
Handy.
Almost $99 million. No, I'm kidding.
Whoa. Oh, okay.
That would be kind couple of awesome.
just a couple bucks. Nah.
Okay.
About 99,000.
Still.
So almost 100 grand.
Nice.
Okay.
So there you go. See, video games and art connecting.
Mm-hmm.
It's
bathing, loving one another.
Possibly.
Getting
their art
time.
On.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, unrelated to any of that is another
figure out a way to segue.
How about we'll transition by going to another response to from a listener saying that reminder that Neil deGrasse Tyson was the guy who got the ball rolling on Pluto being removed from the list of planets and turned into a planetoid.
Okay. That guy.
Yes, he was the one that kind of got that kicked off.
So he's kind of a jerk.
Depends on who you ask.
Oh, okay.
But
don't ask Pluto.
I actually can transition from that story actually rather nicely with a story about robots, specifically about robots.
Okay.
This one is
about. Do they like art?
They shun it.
I think they're indifferent. This one's
in
indifferent
world.
To art.
Terminardinator.
No, this one is similar in basic construction to a robot we mentioned before, which was a group of robots, I believe, out of MIT.
Is it a quadcopter?
No. Where they were based around cubes, and they could bounce around and connect to each other and reform their shape programmatically.
Mm.
This is also a cube-based robot, but it it uses the same basic locomotive ability, which is
trains?
No. It uses
skateboards.
The force of
when uses the force
when you rapidly stop a wheel that at when angular velocity. There we go.
Okay. You do realize there's no such thing as force sensitive droids.
Yes.
Okay.
The
don't want to make people angry.
the
besides the trick of moving itself by, you know, spinning a flywheel and then stopping it quickly to make it tumble,
Okay.
It can also spin several flywheels to make itself balance and dance on a corner. So it's
okay.
That makes it a little bit unique from the other robots because it's not trying to interact with anything else, but it is able to balance itself, and that's a pretty fancy trick on its own. It can apparently like move flat.
So
and
basically
then point.
A gyroscope.
It's like a gyroscope, okay. But it's an autonomous gyroscope. It doesn't need to be spun up. It can spin itself into its own gyroscopic joy. So
that sounds dangerous.
Potentially, if you're not careful,
must outlaw this.
Do not taunt the super happy gyroscopic robot. It's a really neat device, and they have some video of it working on the link that I will put up in just a second. So there you go, robots that are doing more interesting tricks with sensors and angular momentum.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a story that I feel like I need to correct some misconceptions on.
Oh,
because right. It's a story that spread like wildfire. So maybe you've heard it, but I know a lot of people on my Facebook feed did not understand it whatsoever, and they started making fun of it right away. But I think it's awesome. The entire idea that Amazon is going to start shipping you things before you order them. So the idea behind it it's not like one of the different music clubs or anything like that where you're like constantly sending things back.
Right.
The idea is that they're strategically putting things in the delivery hubs near you in case you order them.
Okay.
And so it makes the shipping that much faster.
And potentially less expensive as well, I would think.
Exactly. So it's basically a massive like money-saving deal for them. And it's kind of a nifty little bit of just smart tech and just figuring out what you're more prone to do, which you sort of get a taste for that anyway just by the things that it suggests for you.
Yeah.
But my favorite part about the entire thing is the idea that someplace there's this toy box just for me.
It's your gold box.
Right. And they're just ready at a moment's notice to ship everything in there to me. But I know they're also going to get stuff wrong and like...
Yeah, like the moment you buy someone a gift on Amazon, now your toy box is full of things that, like, turn of the century, romance novels. No, what you didn't want those, but someone you know does. It's like,
yeah, they do need a better way of classifying what the intended use of the things that you purchased on Amazon were.
Well, I know they have that little thing like, is this a gift? Like, if you click on that, maybe.
Maybe that will start.
Maybe that will
start weighting things differently. Yeah. That would be nice.
This was a gift I didn't want.
Yeah, every so often I scroll through my like recommended for you. That's not for me. That was bought for somebody else. That's right. Not for me. That was for somebody else.
The big spoiler for me has been for the Amazon MP3 side of things. One Christmas.
Oh boy.
It was demanded that I download a Mannheim Steamroller Christmas album.
So and ever since,
everything to do with Mannheim Steamroller goes directly to me. It's like they're trying to shove it in my face. And I believe that was before like the intended thing, and it was on the like MP3 side of things. So
They're always refining their algorithms for their own recommendation engine, so I'm sure that will begin to be weeded out eventually.
Hey, even if they get it wrong every once in a while, I still like the idea of somewhere there's my toy box, and it may have a lot of Mannheim Steamroller albums in it, but at least half of it is stuff that I really want.
Yeah, that's true, and that's nothing to be sniffed at. That's pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah, and... apparently, one of our listeners says Pluto can suck it. So that
I don't
listener
know if it
does
can.
Not want to have any Pluto-related things in their Amazon toy box.
It's true.
So
okay, I gotcha. Hey, see,
that's how I bring it back.
More power to you, listener.
I think that's going to wrap it up for our news portion of the show.
Safe. Yeah,
I think it's a good time to take a music break, and then we'll come back with some geek talk.
Yes.
Remember, like some listeners have, we love it when you participate. So please do that by hitting up our Facebook page, Robots Attack, two separate words, and our
Twitter handle, which is Robots Attack Me, and then our own email. robotsattackshow@gmail.com, or if you want to bypass all of that and find one place to rule them all, robotsattack.me.
That's right. All right. I'm going to play the artist The Well-Wishers with the track Real Today from the album Dunwoody, another local band. All right. You're listening to Robots Attack. Stick around for more. We'll be right back after this music break.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We're in Geek Talk. This is where we just kind of get to kick back and talk about whatever's on our mind for a little bit. Relax. Mm-hmm. After we've bombarded you with tons of awesome news,
yeah,
you can absorb it and relax with us. And you know, tell us some geeky things that you've been doing.
Yeah.
I think Caleb has some things he wants to talk about first.
Yes. When I was around 10, my dad took me back to took me to China with my mom and I to China, I guess I should say. And
why?
Why? Because he's from Hong Kong, so it's sort of we got to go sort of visit his
I didn't know that.
What?
What?
No. And on the
Jason's
way,
Jason's playing the part of the listener.
on the way over to China, it's a very long flight. Let's just, you know, it's I think the short version's 15 hours, usually longer than that with layovers.
Or without tailwind or with tailwind?
That's probably with
tailwind.
That's probably with tailwind and with very short layovers, which is unusual. But the main thing, one of the things that trip started on me is a fascination with a particular story from Chinese mythology, fables, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. You know, it's like we have the Grimm fairy tales, Snow White, Red Riding Hood, and all of those.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One of the like biggest, most famous stories in China in terms of fable is known as Journey to the West, or as some people more affectionately know it as the Monkey King, which is roughly the story.
I am familiar.
Yeah, if you've seen Dragon Ball, you've actually seen a version of the story.
A very loose version.
A very loosely related version of the story.
Right.
It's more like based on the characters seen in this other story, kind of loose. But in the main story, there is a being born of a stone egg who is a monkey, but he's stronger, faster, smarter than all the rest of them. And he's well-meaning and kind, but he has a mischievous streak, and that gets him into trouble.
He's a monkey,
and they're
they come from stone eggs or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. While they're friendly, they are known for their mischief, and he gets into all sorts of trouble, especially when he decides to hang out in the kingdom of heaven and the clouds. He creates all sorts of things and gets himself cast out. And as penance for some of the mischief that he causes in heaven, he is forced to work with to guide a monk across the land who is searching for a specific scroll, which is located in the western side of China. So, which was at that time the edge of the world. So it's like
for China,
and yeah. Which, if you've seen it on a map, it's quite the journey. So the story is really famous, and there's been hundreds and hundreds of versions of it told over the years, not unlike you know, Snow White, been told so many different times. And now they're making, for some reason, Chinese cinema is taking a note from Hollywood, and they're releasing two Monkey King movies.
Oh, okay.
This year. The first is called Journey to the West, and it's directed by Stephen Chow, who did Kung Fu Hustle and Shaolin Soccer. Okay. So that's going to be a very different version of the story. It's a little bit more lighthearted, a little more fantastic. I'm looking forward to that because I really loved both of
those. I'm guessing there's going to be some mischievous in that.
I should think
probably,
so.
Probably, yeah.
And a lot of really over-the-top digital effects, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Perhaps some kung fu.
Perhaps.
Okay. A smidge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a little.
And the other one is just called The Monkey King, and it's a little more sort of action blockbuster, like Avengers-like movie.
Okay.
Even though it's
starring Chow Yun-fat, or
no actors that I can that I recognize. I think. Well, I take it back. Donnie Yee is in there, but I think he's playing the Monkey King, so he's in a lot of makeup, so you wouldn't recognize him anyways if you did see him.
Oh, okay.
So, but it looks absolutely fantastic. Also, it still has a lot of fantastic elements, but it's a little bit more realistic. In its fantasy, sort of like, I guess, Snow White and the Huntsman in a way, where it's like, it was magic, but it was realistically depicted magic.
Okay.
Or it looks like, you know, everything's handled seriously.
Magic like your mom used to make.
It's handled seriously, for lack of a better phrase. So, fantastic, but seriously done. So, it looks like a lot of fun, too.
Okay.
Does
he look like a Planet of the Apes monkey?
No, his prosthetics are considerably more advanced than that. So he actually has expression.
Okay, I'm not interested anymore.
The version I saw.
I like the coconut shell face. Like the two. Yeah.
Well, if you go back far enough, I'm sure you can go back and find the 1980s, 1970s version.
Sweet.
That was a serial on TV that has that style if you're interested.
Yeah, find that for me.
There you go.
I'll see what I can do. But yeah, my dad used to like rent the videos of those at the Chinese grocery store, and I'd watch them at home.
Okay.
No idea what's happening because it's all subtitled it was spoken in Cantonese and subtitled in Mandarin.
Makes
but
sense.
None of them were speaking English, so I'm just like, I'm just watching this.
Yeah,
cool.
Just the visuals.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you learned how to read Mandarin that way, sort of.
I know.
from Cantonese.
Yeah, no, I just watched the all the bright colors and kung fu action go across the screen. It was fun.
That sounds cool.
I'm looking forward to seeing when they hit the stateside.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun seeing all of the things, like once you get familiar with the story, all of the things that they lift from it and put into Dragon Ball Z, like the extending pole and flying Nimbus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the monk that may or may not be Krillin.
Indeed. Perhaps.
Maybe. Maybe he'll make a little guest appearance or something.
Hopefully. Like,
oh, it's Krillin.
Right.
Is it Krillin? I don't know. Well, I'll wrap us up with a game that really surprised me.
Okay.
Okay.
Got a chance.
In how horrible it is? Or
no, the exact opposite, actually.
Oh, really?
Huh.
That's always a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
I have a feeling I've been waiting for just this because
I had a chance to rent Rise, Son of Rome.
Okay.
If you're unfamiliar with it, it's one of the launch titles for the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
It got a lot of kind of negative publicity, kind of negative flack when it kind of first showed off at E3. A lot of people were like, well, it looks really pretty, but I really don't like QuickTime events, blah, blah, blah. Like, it looks really repetitive. Well, I rented it because I actually started hearing like, this actually isn't that bad of a game. So it's like, you know, I'll give it a shot. Why rent it? I mean, if I don't like it, I can just send it back.
Right.
Turns out they were right. It is very pretty. And it's actually pretty solid. Like, it's not the greatest game in the world, but I sort of look at it as kind of like the, in
Dead
a way.
Space One?
For me, more like the first Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
It's
equal parts
not
demo
so much,
and game.
Yeah, it's like it has a solid foundation, but I think if and hopefully they do a sequel, they'll have a little more time and they can build off that foundation that they've okay. made to have like a better game. But
does it take place during the Punic Wars?
Don't know. I do know that it does sort of fiddle with history.
Okay.
A fair amount. So certain characters aren't the ages they should be in history and stuff like
that. Are there alien artifacts or no?
No, not so much.
Okay.
But they do have some elements in it that I'm very glad that they did throw in.
Okay.
I won't say any because they're actually kind of fun to find out for yourself. And they do a really, at least in my opinion, an awesome job of doing the kind of backstories a little bit. Basically, you're playing this Roman named Marius, and it starts out that you're taking the emperor and trying to hide him from the barbarians that are attacking Rome.
Again.
And when you get in his sort of safe house, Marius starts telling his backstory to the emperor. And when they do that, they do these moments where it's, instead of like a cutscene, it's all like stone and marble work.
Oh, okay, like the opening of the trailer for it, where it was like the
yeah,
stone
kind
figures.
Of. It's like if you looked at marble work and stone and stuff like that, like art pieces of soldiers and everything, and like the camera would pan across those, and while Marius was talking about what was going on, like that's what you'd see, but they'd be all still pieces, like they were actual like art pieces.
Okay.
So and it, cool. it looked really nice. And then one of the other ones that they only did this once, but the best I can describe it is almost like watercolor kind of a cutscene. Like it looked so awesome. Like I would play an entire game just in that effect that they did. But as far as the game itself, like it's best played in chunks. Like it is a pretty short game. Like you could blow through it in a day if you wanted to, maybe even two at the most.
Uh-huh. Right.
But it's pretty short. Like there's no real side missions or anything. The story, it's pretty linear, but the combat is pretty solid. I understand a lot of people are saying like, oh, it's pretty repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be, but I think it has a pretty solid combat system. Like you're always having a shield and your short sword, and you use your shield to block guys, parry guys. And then what they do, it's not really quick time events.
Mm-hmm.
When you are attacking guys, after a little bit, after you do enough damage, like a skull will appear above them.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to engage in executions, you hit the right trigger. That's when it sort of slows down and the guys get sort of highlighted in blue for the X button, yellow, you know, for Y, and you time those, you hit those to perform the executions. Mm. You don't have to do them if you don't want to,
okay.
But what they do is on the D-pad, you unlock these four abilities.
Mm-hmm.
One, every time you perform a successful execution, you can get either extra health, extra XP, do extra damage, or fill your focus meter, which is an ability to take your shield, slam it into the ground, and it slows everybody around you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like a bullet time, kind of.
Okay,
right.
Not using guns.
Right.
And you can hit those on the fly. So you can be in an execution already and go, I don't really need any health, and I had that selected already. Bam, I'll hit. Give me some more XP. And yeah, it's super easy to do, and you can unlock different like executions that buff, like give you more health.
Mm-hmm.
If you select, you know, you want bonus health or bonus focus, then there's also like how many see what other stuff. It's just like certain sort of abilities you can unlock by spending the XP on. So
right.
It's not a like a huge system right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping if they do a sequel that they add, you know, more to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty solid foundation right now.
Sounds like.
Yeah, and they have some nice moments to kind of break up just like running and fighting guys.
Right.
You'll get on a ballista or they actually implement the voice commands.
Uh-huh.
Probably one of the best I've ever seen in a game.
Oh.
That's not saying a whole lot because there aren't that many, but uh-huh. Marius is like a captain and a commander in the Roman Legion.
So you can shout commands.
So yeah, so occasionally throughout the game, you'll get control of men,
mm-hmm.
you know, squads of guys. So some of those are like archers. So while you're fighting, if you have control of those, you can shout like fire volley
uh-huh.
or, you know, like archers, you know, and they'll hit the guys like around like where you are. So you can go and it's just, it's simple and it sort of makes sense because it's mm-hmm. like you would be shouting these orders in the battle, like
right.
do this, do that. And then they have other parts where you select like, okay, I want to put my squad of guys to protect over in this section.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a group of archers. Do I want to put them over there to help those guys or to help me on this spot? So they kind of have these little moments that break it up, just the straight up like.
And it gives it a little bit more depth and strategy as opposed to just, I have a sword and shield and I will obliterate all in front of me kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure that he sounds like he is kind of legendary heroic figure in that he can take out more and do more than your average
foot like,
soldier, but
excuse me. Yeah, since he has those abilities and stuff, which mm-hmm. sort of translates to I played a little bit of the multiplayer, which is another uh-huh. really surprising fun part of the game. It's mm-hmm. basically co-op, like you play with another person. You can roll solo also.
Right.
And it takes place in the Colosseum.
Uh-huh.
And they do a really awesome thing with the Colosseum where, you know, if you know about history, they've flooded the Colosseum and done naval battles inside mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So what they've done in the game is they do things that obviously never really happened in there the way that they set it up, but it's cool as a video game.
Right.
When you get in there, when they want to change the setting or add things, like the floor moves around or goes down, things pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just looks really cool, like when you're in the Colosseum, like seeing the floor change and things rise up, like, you know, a catapult or these cage things, and there's traps and everything. And
right.
you have, you just play as like a level one sort of gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
And as you play, you gain XP, and then you take that XP and gold.
Mm-hmm.
You take that gold to buy booster packs. When you buy those booster packs, it's a lot like the packs in, since we're familiar with Mass Effect 3.
Drink.
Yeah. And you'll get like and your guy has all these different like slots on him so you can replace, like get new shields and swords and like armor that you're wearing, a helmet, like all, and they'll add, you know, to everything that you're doing and how mm-hmm. they sort of add in those four abilities that Marius has.
Uh-huh. Right.
At the beginning, you select what god you want to worship, and that god gives you one of those like abilities. So like I always picked Apollo because mm-hmm. he gave me the health.
Right.
And then this other thing, it's like you always get one, and then each god has either the like that slam that I mentioned before where mm-hmm. it like knocks everybody back, or a slam and it, or actually it's more of a shout and it slows everybody down around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another ability, but it's locked. You have to play to unlock it. I never played enough to get it unlocked, but mm-hmm. but yeah, the
really
game like totally surprised me. It's nowhere near like amazing or anything, but for a launch game and just all the negative publicity it had around it, like
mm-hmm.
if you have a chance to rent it, it's totally worth it. I think it's
that's cool.
It's a solid game.
And it's interesting that you're hearing you describe it, because I remember watching the E3 coverage of the game and like the demos, like I could, what you're describing in terms of like the executions, like that is not what I saw in the demo. So it's nice to see that they actually kind of like thought through that a little further instead of like, oh, just press Y faster.
Yeah.
There's actually a way to make this more interesting.
Yeah. And
that's kind of cool.
And again, you don't have to do any of this. You can just keep hitting guys and mm-hmm. kill them off. Like you don't have to do any of the executions. They just gave you,
a bonus,
a reason to do them.
Mm-hmm.
So you get those extra things. So yeah, I thought it was pretty solid.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's interesting, too, to me. It sounds like it has some elements of Vagrant Story in a weird sort of way as far as the quick time being able to do different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, pretty neat.
Yeah, I think it's worth checking out. All right, I think that'll wrap it up for Geek Talk.
Sounds good.
We'll take another music break. I'm going to play the artist Dog Party with the track Box of Handkerchiefs from the album Lost Control. And then we'll be back with Jason's Fixation. You want to tease the folks?
Yeah. I'm in a weird sort of way, and don't get turned off by this.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to talk about medieval boobs.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I'm curious. How will this play out?
I am surprised that you'd be intrigued.
I know. It's a huge shock. All right. We'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. Television History. The Museum of American Heritage presents Television History, an exhibit displaying a variety of unique 1940s and 1950s era television sets from the museum's collection. The exhibit explores everything from how a television works to its social impacts. The exhibition opens September 27, 2013, which is already passed, but it runs through March 23, 2014. And regular exhibit hours are 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, unless otherwise noted. The museum is located at 351 Homer Dole Avenue in Palo Alto, and admission is free.
It's time for Jason's Fixation.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is going to end up being a super long one or anything, but I thought it was a really interesting article that came across on io9.
That's fine, because I went longer than I should have.
Okay. But it basically ended up being a research article about what accurate women's armor would have been like from yesteryear, since there are a bunch of historical sightings of women being in battle and whatnot, and of course we're trying to temper what we're seeing in most video games as a very feminized suit of armor.
Yeah.
Usually trying to show stuff more than it should in the first place, but mostly people have brought up the idea that what's now being called boob plate, armor that's made to accentuate one's bust.
I've always found that particular design choice a mystery. I'm like, but that just wouldn't work.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if mystery is the correct word.
Well, yeah. See, unfortunately, the way my mind works, I figured out ways that it would work. But that aside, it's still very dangerous.
It seems fundamentally flawed, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, okay, it's dangerous beyond just the idea that you're leaving very large target areas that somebody could get hurt in. It's also dangerous in that a large part of military engagements in armored day were done with heavy things like warhammers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was, if you're really good with a sword, you can find the spots in the armor that you can take somebody out with skill and ease. But
right.
Most people would just hit the people until they were subdued. And mm-hmm. it was a good tactic because armor, it may not like crush or anything like that, but you're still transmitting the force of a heavy object like directly into it.
Yes.
But the major flaw with the boob plate is that it creates places where the armor would crush if that tactic were used,
mm-hmm.
and it would basically cause metal to go straight up into the purse's
chest cavity.
Right. the important parts that allow for breathing and heart function.
Yeah.
So design flaw.
They would destroy your sternum.
Right. So even if you were incredibly skilled and knew how to cause an enemy to just hit you in your boob plate, it would still probably not be the greatest thing to wear. So the article ends up going over basically the problems with trying to research how people actually did wear armor in yesteryear.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the biggest thing that people cite is Joan of Arc, and they actually still have her armor that they show around and whatnot. But the piece of armor that they do have of hers was apparently her cheapest piece of armor, and it was made quickly. It was utilitarian and whatnot, but and of course it was made specifically for her to accommodate her being able to fight properly and whatnot, and her different shape of body. But other than that, there's almost no changes from male armor because it was
a
very basic piece of armor.
Mm-hmm.
So it does end up creating kind of interesting questions in that age. Was it pretty much all modifications of male armor, because there were people that are cited in history that did fight? But moreover, it ends up, it's interesting just because in trying to research this stuff, they end up running across the same problems that we kind of have today, in that everybody who had depictions of the armor were trying to feminize it for one reason or another. Not necessarily as okay, these are women, we're going to try and dress them sexy and whatnot.
Right.
Not that that's a unique problem through the ages, but a lot of them, they'd end up dressing them in certain robes in order to show their status and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it would also obscure any sort of actual armor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if they were to wear armor, I think I read a somewhat the same article there, said that most of the armor that is found is still quote unquote masculine, if you put the armor on that they would have worn, they would have looked like everybody else. And so it's like,
exactly,
how would you tell one from the other?
Yeah, so it ends up kind of interesting too, because it goes very quickly into like the Ghosts video game. All of the women in the Call of Duty Ghosts video game, they look very rough and tumble, but a certain amount of that is just because it has highly standardized armor.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't very many armor pieces even today that are actually made specifically for women. I mean, there are, and they have been adapted sort of, but they haven't really been made top to bottom to allow for a woman to function in her everyday life, which ends up kind of interesting too, just because it's created a whole new market, kind of, because you need all of this sort of stuff just in order for soldiers to actually function correctly and be able to not have to remove armor in order to do basic daily things. And so it just ended up being a really interesting article to me, and just because it didn't necessarily answer any questions. It was an article of just nothing but more questions about the question. But it was still a really interesting bit of research, in my view. And I'm sorry to say it, but it had a lot of pictures of boob plates, so it caught my attention quickly.
Plus.
Well, that's how it entices you in, but then it hits you with the knowledge, and you're like, huh.
Right. And then I was educated, and I felt like I was a better person for it.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not, but it's baby steps.
Speaking of some educated things, our radio stream. If you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at ksu.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. Now, will you have that article?
I'm posting it right now, actually.
Okay, awesome. All right. I think that was definitely worth fixating over.
Yes.
I think we're going to take another music break, and then we will come back with the core. And Jason has provided us with this week's core topic. Would you like to sort of quickly kind of tease the folks about it?
No, not really. But
well, I no, would like you to.
No, it started out as
just simple. Okay. Just keep it simple. We're just teasing the folks.
Okay.
We'll go into detail when we get to it.
Top five geeks.
All right, there you go. So definitely stick around for that and start thinking about your geeks and maybe what you think a geek is or who, what they are.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, we'll be right back with more Robots Attack here on KACU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
You are now entering the core.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KACU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We're in the core, and this week's core topic is actually provided to us by Jason. So I'm going to have him, I'm going to turn it over to him, have him.
Yeah, at its opening, it's very basic. It's basically our top five geeks, not necessarily in order, but as a crew, like who we'd want our geeks to be. Mm-hmm. And the idea actually came from sort of an unlikely source. I just ran into a PlayStation giveaway, and I admit I wouldn't mind having a PlayStation 4, and so I applied to it. And it seems like sort of the running thing with these giveaways is that they try and get you to link on Facebook and so on, and they try and make it into something that, like, where you actually invest yourself in commenting about it. And it's the first time where it sort of accomplished that really well for me.
Okay.
Because it asked the simple question, who is your geek squad? And so I'd assume that it would be, for a lot of people, like their friends, people that help them out with computer stuff and whatnot. But my mind took it as, okay, I have a movie, I have to accomplish this awesome task. I need the best geeks in the world to do it. So I just picked and chose best fiction geeks in order to do it.
And just to clarify, not to actually make the movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is all in theory. But it ended up raising some interesting questions, too, because a lot of these were very old characters, and fairly few of them were recent. And so it made it sort of an interesting thought of, like, how geeks have changed over time,
yeah,
how we depict them, and how geeks react to geek depictions, sort of. So
yeah,
it seemed like an interesting topic to bring up, and so.
Yeah, because that's immediately when you know, we emailed and we figured out, okay, this is going to be the topic, I started thinking, like, well, what is a geek then? You know, like, what's the difference between a geek and a nerd? Or,
right,
like, is this, would this person be a geek or a nerd? Or, like, yeah, I just, I'll say it was tough because I started thinking of someone. I'm like, is that a geek? I'm like, well, what is a geek then?
You right. Know? For
like,
me, it was almost cheating because this was, this was me just responding very quickly to a Facebook thing that they were requiring me to post it in order to possibly get a video game system. Mm-hmm. So I feel worse for you guys since I already have my list and it was very quick for me. But I also wanted to know your thought process in this.
Well, I guess, I mean, since I mentioned it, not to kind of take control. But I guess in your minds, what is a geek or a nerd? Like, do you want to answer that now? Or do you want to go through some characters? I'm not trying to take control or anything.
Let's go through the characters at least quickly, and then we can find out where
we have
similarities and whatnot.
Okay.
I'll start with mine. The very first one that popped in my mind, and this also kind of goes to different like subsections of geek too.
Mm-hmm.
First one that popped in my mind was Dr. Peter Venkman.
Okay.
And definitely like a knowledge guy. He has a lot of stuff, but he doesn't necessarily use it appropriately either. But it
for those who aren't familiar with this character, this is from
the Ghostbusters movies,
played by
my brain is completely
Bill
frozen.
Murray, right?
Yes, Bill Murray.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just helping the audience in case I don't know who this is.
Basically, Bill Murray's kind of smart-ass character from the Ghostbusters movies, and I mean, he is a doctor. He has knowledge and things, but it sort of goes to kind of the mischievous monkey type of thing that you were talking about. And yeah, anyway.
So in your mind, he's a geek.
To me, it seems like he's a geek just because he is forged within the geek realm, I suppose.
And
because it's all about higher learning, and it seems like his character had to have been made off of a core of normal psychology building up into parapsychology and up from there.
Right.
And so it ended up putting him in a position where he ended up hanging out with a lot more other geeks. And in a weird sort of way, it seems like that kind of identifies a geek also is by their surrounding geeks.
Egon definitely would be more quote unquote prototypical geek in a lot of ways, it seems to me.
Yeah, it seems to me like that entire crew is a geek in one way or another, because to me it ends up blurring the lines, because I end up incorporating a lot of stuff from like the cartoon series. But yeah, you have everything from the tax attorney, and you have even the secretary is usually dressed in what we'd consider sort of geeky clothes. And so it seems like there's a lot of little subsections represented in that movie that encompass geekdom for me.
Okay. Alrighty.
But mostly I just like Bill Murray the best, so.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So you wouldn't see any of them as nerds? I'm not saying I do.
Me personally, I've never made the distinction. I understand making the distinction. I understand the people who say it's identified one way or another, but to me they're the same thing. I use them interchangeably.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a common thing, like to swap out one for the other depending on who you talk to. Some people bothers them more than others.
Yeah.
I tend to separate them, but it's good to know.
And it's interesting too, because I mean, you did an entire comic routine on the differentiation, and we enjoyed watching that.
It's interesting. Did you want to do any more characters before we move on to the rest of us?
I'll go ahead and go through.
Through your list.
My next one was jumping to the most recent one, and that's Maurice.
Go ahead.
It's Maurice Moss from the IT Crowd. He's like Bill Murray is the comedy side of like sort of the smart, sarcastic comedy side, which I identify with a lot. In a weird sort of way, Maurice Moss is the absolute opposite. It's being kind of roped into every joke by accident just by the way he is.
Okay.
And I love that character so much. I've been looking for a t-shirt that I would proudly wear that has his image on it somehow.
Okay.
Haven't found one perfect yet, but a very lovable character. The next one, I'm going to sub one out because as I was thinking of it, it's one that I just kind of took because it was part of pop culture for me growing up. But to me, I'm going to sub out Brian Johnson, which I'm sure nobody even recognizes the name of.
Okay.
It was basically the nerdy kid from Breakfast Club.
Oh.
And okay. I don't even know if they really mention his name all the way. But to me, it was kind of a prototypical geek for a lot of people. And I'm swapping him out for a character that I absolutely loved, Seymour Burkoff from the original La Femme Nikita, or not original, but the La Femme Nikita series.
Okay.
I just loved kind of...
The first series, not the Maggie Q.
Right. Yeah, the Maggie Q one is just called Nikita, and the one that they made back in 2000 was La Femme Nikita. And I enjoyed having a character that was very powerful in the amount of knowledge that he could alter satellites, do all of this crazy stuff,
mm-hmm.
but was still a very much just overwhelmed kid mm-hmm. that was kind of stuck in the situation. I really enjoyed that idea of a geek character. From there, I have Garth Algar from Wayne's World.
Okay.
In a weird sort of way, the same character, because he does end up retasking satellites and stuff like that. And the final one is kind of the ultra cool geek, and that's Chris Knight from Real Geniuses. And it's the geek that anybody who is a geek probably wants to be, but probably won't actually attain.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Well, before we move any further, I'll do our last PSA. Just before, I don't want to break up any momentum.
Sure.
So, if you're an animal lover and wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets at our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. All right. If you're just tuning in, we're in the core here on Robots Attack, Geek Central talk show, talking about some of our favorite geeks.
Right.
Maybe
right.
What is a geek? What is mm-hmm. a nerd? All these questions that mm-hmm. have come up from Jason's
the
interesting
higher
topic.
Learning side of,
yeah.
of the analytics of geekdom, I suppose.
Hmm. See, it's interesting. My brain did something different with this topic. Like it tried, for some reason, my brain said, let's find geek characters that I think are both cool characters, good characters, and also very geeky.
Hey, that's completely cool.
So my first is, not that it's number one, but just first in the list, is John Crichton from Farscape. Astrophysicist.
True.
Explorer. And because he's like also in his being an astronaut, he's not willing to step into the unknown, like, and just accept where he is, and that it is the ability to adapt to that situation, the kind of situations, that much information so quickly is like one, very geeky, and two, you have to be really smart to get out and that to get that far into deep space and still keep your brain intact. And I find his character really interesting. And you know,
yeah, it was really fun having an action hero
mm-hmm.
character that was still smart.
Smart, yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice
it's
change
Indiana
of pace.
Jones in a weird sort of way.
Who was the next on my list was okay. Indiana Jones, because it's like one sort of like future Indiana Jones, the other one's past Indiana Jones. I think
or
you know where I'm going.
Ever present Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. For both of them, like these characters, they're better defined by their knowledge and what they can do with their brain as opposed to what their physical brawn is. They have a very physical aspect to them, but that's not the only thing that defines them. Along the same lines, I throw in there Isaac Clarke from the Dead Space series.
Okay.
Engineer. It's a different slant on things. Like it's a little bit more quote
quote unquote practical knowledge geek, where it's like the knowledge of a system, how to work it, how to bend it to your will so you can manage to survive.
Yeah, this is kind of cool just for me because maybe you'd agree and maybe I'm completely insulting you here, but it seems like you're the most easily identified in the geek realm as far as as like you're really into science and are more interested in articles about math and stuff like that. But all of these are really action-packed, like heroic geeks.
That's true.
And that's really cool to me. But
yeah, I think that's where Indiana Jones becomes kind of interesting, because he comes from an era of character styling where the scientist was the hero. Granted, okay, it was guys like Doc Samson and Indiana Jones where they were like these pinnacles of physical exertion as well as super brains, but that's the same era that brought us Batman as a character.
That's true. Yeah.
So I think that's kind of
awesome. Is he on your list or no?
No, Batman actually isn't on the list because I just now realized.
How dare you?
I just realized that connection back
like,
to.
Like, oh, perfect segue.
Yeah. Perfect segue. And then I tossed in Morden Solis and Tali Zora from Mass Effect.
Oh, okay.
Morden Solis, kind of obvious. He's a geneticist. He, you know, created
horrible things.
And also did all he could to resurrect those, to undo those things when the opportunity arose. And then Tali
has a beautiful singing voice as well.
He has an excellent singing voice. And Tali Zora, just because she's kind of like Isaac Clarke in that she can bodge together almost anything and, you know, keep a ship running and understand the mechanics of it and still not shy away from being physical when the need arises.
Okay. It's funny that the way my mind works now, I wish there was a game that was sort of like Dead Space-ish, except with her, like not necessarily versus space zombies or anything like that.
That would be totally awesome.
But yeah,
I would play that game. BioWare.
I probably would too.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So Joe,
honestly, I feel kind of like I'd honestly rather end up with your list because mine's garbage, really. Like, mine's.
Okay. You have to do two.
Well, no, because the thing is, like, I was stuck in that a definition of like geek and nerd, and like I didn't look at it anywhere near. Well, sort of. I have the same one, like the Val Kilmer character.
Okay,
but like I kept asking, is his character a geek? Like, it was so hard because on the outside, yes, but maybe like on the inside, like within the group, no. Like, I don't know.
And I guess that's to me goes back to like Bill Murray's character in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, like I wouldn't see him as a geek, but. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people are defined by their surroundings.
Yeah.
So.
Well, in a way, like Bill Murray, I would still say falls into the category because he is a misfit within society, and most people that are of the geek persuasion have a certain amount of misfit in society. Like, not because, I mean, for some of us, it's probably because some of us are on the Asperger's scale somewhere. And for some of us, it's because like we're just so passionate about this thing that we become an anomaly within society because they just aren't into that like we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of where Bill Murray's thing is, like, Venkman's character's thing goes, because he's into the paranormal, into the metaphysical, while still being technically a doctor of practical science. And so it's like kind of that weird balancing act that some people walk.
Yeah. Yeah, like one I threw on was like the doctor. Is the doctor a geek? Mm. I don't know. Like, I guess. Like,
it makes sense to
me. I had a really hard time. Like, the ones you've thrown out, like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's why I kind of didn't really want to go over mine.
No, I mean, to me, that's what's interesting about it is just the views. And I guess I'm probably have a more stereotypical view than most people. So I don't even go into the thought process all that much.
I think you and I both do. We just have like different stereotypes of what those are, I think.
That makes sense. That's why I want you to just go ahead and do an entire list.
Because mine are more of like the things I guess we would consider geeky.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, like, I have some gamer characters on there and stuff like that. It's like the stuff that I sort of look at as geeky, like those were the characters that I found to put on my list.
Okay, so which gamer but, character?
The Felicia Day character from Supernatural, Charlie.
Oh, okay.
The Eli character from Stargate Universe. Like,
that's a good one.
See, those are like stereotypical geeks. Like,
right.
On sort of my end, and then I think you have ones on your end, and so they're just, but they're different. Like,
yeah, it's fun. And mine are sort of more classical in a weird sort of way. It reaches a little bit farther back into history, but
yeah.
Well, yeah, like mine are more sort of everyday people. Not that the doctor is an everyday person, but like mm-hmm. the ones that I pick
arguably,
are kind of just sort of normal.
Depends which day.
Yeah.
Lots of planets have a north.
Right.
But I think that's also interesting because it's almost that tension between what these characters are that makes the interesting discussion of this topic. Because it's like, is the Doctor geeky? In a way, yes, because he falls into that highly focused mind that is fixated on things or that thinks in ways that nobody else even connects with.
Yeah.
I mean, like, one of the things I remember was one of the earlier Tenet episodes, or was it Miss Matt Smith? I can't remember which. Where they're on the spaceship, and he's walking around taking glasses of water and putting them on the ground, picking them up and putting them on tables, and you're trying to figure out what the heck is he doing, and then like he explains himself. It's like, oh, there's
all I was thinking was the movie Signs.
That's true.
Yeah, but there's no engine vibrations. There's no pulse from the engines and that's how he knew that it wasn't the same as a normal ship. And it's like that's sort of like a geek thing. Like they'll notice a detail that no one else will notice because it's not important to them. But it's like at the same time, it's vitally important to understanding what the situation is.
Right. It the Doctor is arguably Asperger's with enough time to encompass all of knowledge, because most Asperger's cases just are able to fixate on certain areas and they get mm-hmm. really good at that,
mm-hmm.
but they only have so much life in them, so they can't That's learn true. Everything.
They don't regenerate.
The doctor. See, that's why I think it would be interesting, like a younger quote unquote doctor character, to see. Before he learned everything, at different points.
Right, sort of.
I'm hoping eventually they get an episode where he runs across himself when he was much younger.
That would be interesting. Sort of a Doctor Who version of Casino Royale, where it's like, yes, he is still the Doctor, but he's not the Doctor you recognize as being the Doctor.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's a meat and potatoes Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I think on that note, we're going to wrap it up.
We'll wrap it up with meat and potatoes, Doctor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which
why
is
going
to sound really weird for people who don't know what we're talking about in the first place.
But let us know what you think by hitting up our Facebook page, Robots Attack, or
going to Robots Attack Me on Twitter, or just going to robotsattack.me. That's robotsattack.me for archive episodes and the interact section where you can hit us up via email or Facebook or whatever.
All right. We're out of here. Coming up next, Pre-Funk Show. Stick around for some awesome music from some awesome guys. We'll be back next week. We're here every Thursday from 7 to 9. We're Robots Attack here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. Take it easy, everybody.
Raccoon. Veronica. Misto.